to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see what we can find. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way via live streaming on richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are broadcast every weekend here on this station, and we are also rebroadcast on A2Zen.fm. Check their local listings on their website, A2Zen.fm. We encourage you to do just that. We're going to jump right into our program today. Usually I go through a few preliminaries, but I find this gentleman quite extraordinary, exciting to talk to, especially because of the project that he's been involved with. This is his second appearance on this program, and actually this is his second appearance this year, which is quite exciting. For the Sender is the project, as I've kind of come to know it, and this time we have a new book. It's called Love Is, and in parentheses, Not a Feeling. Alex Woodard is my guest, and there is also a full-length CD that comes along with the book. And Alex, thanks so much for joining us again on the program.
Oh, thanks for having me again. Good to talk to you. It seems like not so long ago you and I were talking with each other.
Just yesterday. One of the things that I find so extraordinary about this project, both the first book as well as this and the CDs, I love, of course, the fact that the first book is actually... It's sort of a combination of an audio/music CD that allows you to read the book and hear from those who wrote letters, and we're going to talk about that aspect of it too. But the one thing that has struck me so profoundly in these two parts of the project is the fact that in spite of the fact that it is more blessed to give than receive, there's some real truth to that when it comes to letter writing. I'm sure you're aware of all kinds of different programs and people who have workshops and seminars and so forth, and they encourage the participants, write a letter to someone about whatever the tension is, whatever the subject matter is, whatever the issue happens to be, write that letter, but they tell you not to send it. Because the point of writing the letter has nothing to do with who you're writing the letter to.
Absolutely.
And it's about setting yourself free. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, that's really the genesis of the whole project, and right down to the name, For the Sender, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of different levels and layers, but at its core, it's about this idea that writing a letter is more for the sender. And when you get into it, there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of different layers, because there's songs that are written about these letters, but those songs are in a way written more for the sender, you know? This whole project is something that I'm giving, you know, away, kind of like you, not giving away, but like I'm putting out there and giving of myself.
Right.
But, you know, at its core, it's for the sender too, which is me, you know. And I think it all boils down to that letter, though, like you're saying. And it's such a therapeutic and powerful thing just to write it down. It's all you got to do. And the actual physical act, at least to me, of writing is a big part of that. It's not typing. It's not, you know, sending an email. It's nothing like that. It's actually sitting down with a pen and a piece of paper and writing, and not editing yourself too much, and just doing it and getting it out there. There's something really liberating, you know. You're able to kind of, I think it's because you're able to communicate what you're really feeling or what you're really thinking without worrying about what the other person is going to say, because they don't have to see it. You know what I mean? It's just for you. And I think that's one of the reasons so many programs, like you said, workshops, use that idea, is because it's an opportunity for you to be really honest. And we're not always, you know, as honest as we could be when we're thinking about other people's feelings or other people, how people are going to react or what they're going to think of us, you know. But if it's just between you and that piece of paper, there's no reason to hold anything back.
I know, too, that a lot of people get concerned, you know, and they will self-edit. Even if they know they're not going to send this letter, their fears start to creep up in the back of their mind. Well, what if somebody finds this? You know, what if, you know, it's kind of like I need to have a really good friend who will go to my computer if I die and wipe my browser history in case I went to places that I shouldn't have gone. Right. I don't want anybody to know that. That's kind of how we feel a little bit if we put it, especially if we write it down on paper. Somehow it's going to go be put in a file drawer somewhere. And that's, of course, why in many of these other scenarios, they recommend, and they sometimes will even have a ceremony where you will then burn the letter as a way to release that energy and so forth. I think, too, another aspect, Alex, is now the ideas, the feelings, the thoughts are now on the outside of you. And you can now better look at them. There's almost a tangibility about it, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, there's something that's a beautiful part of the physical side of writing a letter, right? It's out there. It's out of you, and it's not just spoken to a mirror or your walls in your bedroom or whatever. You know, it's there, and you can see it, and it's got a shape, and, you know, it's got a feel and a color and a texture, and I think that's really important. You know, it's the way that I look at it is that we're here on this planet for such a, you know, at least in this how we are now, is such a short, precious period of time. You know,
yeah.
As you get older, you start thinking a little bit more about your mortality and how at any minute, you know, it can be taken. It doesn't matter how old you are, right? But you can be, your experience here can end at any time. And right. So when you start looking at it through that lens, your concerns about, you know, your browser history or, like you said, you know, the letter getting filed away and somebody finding out or, you know, whatever, they seem very small, you know, in that big, real big picture sort of perspective.
Yeah.
And I think it's you're doing yourself so much good by getting those thoughts and feelings and emotions and everything out. That to worry too much about, you know, and self-edit too much is just, you know, you're doing more harm to yourself than anything, you know, because at the end of the day, our time here is so precious and it's so short. And if somebody's going to be, you know, isn't going to react the way you want to your honesty or they're not, you know, if you're really worried about that kind of stuff, those folks probably aren't the ones that you should be having around anyway. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a very good point.
Yeah, it's just too short. So I really encourage people, you know, when they write letters to the project, that they have to be considered for inclusion. They have to be handwritten, for one thing. And I can tell, you know, when I'm reading, I can tell if someone has kind of written me a press release or if they've written me something from their heart.
From the heart, yeah. Now, that's the difference between the letters in this project for the sender and, say, some of these letters that you might write in one of these other scenarios, and that is that these are very heartfelt letters where people have experienced some kind of a loss. Obviously, the first book as well is in the same genre. But one of the things that struck me, and we'll even get into some of these letters and even some of the songs and how that came about that were created from the letters, but I'm very much into looking at symbolism, and I noticed that there are some very interesting symbols, both literally symbols in the book as well as symbols in the context of some of the chapter titles. I noticed on the first page, and this is literally page 2 of the physical book, for the sender, love is not a feeling. And then you have below that an arrow going to the left with the word music on its right. Then you have a horseshoe below that. Below the horseshoe is the word words and an arrow going to the right, which is to the right of the word words. Can you explain those last three, the arrow, music, horseshoe, words, and the arrow to the right?
Well, like everything, there's layers. You know, literally speaking, the music and the words arrows are pointing either way because that's where you literally find them. You know, when you open that book up and you see the music and pointing to the left, that's where you're going to find that album that is full of these songs that were written about these letters, you know, in my story and so on. And the letters arrow is, I'm sorry, the words arrow is pointing right to where you're going to see those words if you want to start reading, you know? And it's like a choice almost. For, you know, that's the figurative part, or the metaphor, is that you have a choice.
Wow.
And when you get to that second page, you can either go to the left and open up that that music and listen to it before you read, or you can go to the right and start reading the words before you listen to any music. Mm-hmm. Or, which is where the horseshoe comes into play, because the horseshoe is throughout that book.
Yeah.
You can do both at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's what the horseshoe is kind of suggesting. It's not an either or proposition. And the horseshoe is used as a symbol throughout the book, because my story with my horse is such an integral part of the book. So that's what we use as kind of as a reminder.
Yeah.
As you make your way through it, there's a couple chapters in there. There's one called The Step, which has a very a very important moment in it between me and the horse, and it involves a hoof, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the horseshoe idea came from. And interestingly, you know, that horseshoe that you see, which is also on the cover, is my horse's actual shoe.
Oh, wow.
But it's the shoe she had on when I bought her. And we pulled her shoes, and she's been, you know, without shoes ever since then. And so it's kind of a jumping off point. You know, it's like this reminder, you know, to me in particular, of where we were. Because as time unfolded and I worked with this horse more and had some folks helping me that knew what they were doing, you know, it became clear that she didn't, you know, her feet were really hard and she didn't need shoes, and they were kind of constricting her and holding her in, you know, which happens to animals or horses that grow feet very quickly. You know, it can actually like hurt the animal if you're not shoeing them, you know, in a quick enough rotation, because that metal holds their, you know, think about that. It's like having a brace on something that's growing,
yeah.
Right? It constricts it. And so in my horse's case, she didn't need to have the shoes, and so we pulled them. And it's like a reminder of where we were.
Yeah. Well, first of all, when we go to break here in a little bit, I want you to tell us, what selection shall we feature as we go to break? We'll play that going to break. And also, I want to let our listeners know that the book For the Sender, Love Is Not a Feeling, features letters in regard to the following. A man carries his dying friend home over the rocks. A boy takes a bullet for his classmates. A father with brain cancer champions his son's dreams. And a misunderstood horse, as we were just talking, helps an autistic child fly. And I just find that when you read these stories, and there are even pictures in here, I think that's what's so extraordinary, is that these folks who wrote these letters were so willing to be open about what was happening, what had happened, and who these people were that they were writing the letter to, and what they meant to them, that they shared these photographs with you, and now they're there for everyone and posterity. And I just... that to me is just quite extraordinary.
Absolutely.
Especially in this day when everybody is so concerned about privacy and, you know, hiding stuff. It's like, wow.
Well, you know, it speaks to what we talked about earlier about your time here being precious and short. And, you know, what do you have to lose, really?
Yeah.
These are like, the beautiful thing about this, I think, is that it's true. Right. These stories are true. The letters are true. My stories, you know, are true. And so when you're speaking the truth, there's not a lot to hide. And I think that these folks that sent in letters were coming from that place where they'd already been so open and forthright in their writing with me, you know, and knowing that it might get out there into the world. That adding the layers of photos on top was, you know, it was just part of the process, because there really isn't anything to hide, you know, and there wasn't it's all about that kind of authenticity. And I think, you know, like the photo of that Scarlett, you know, Scarlett gave me, who she lost her son in the Sandy Hook shootings. She gave me like a pile of photos that we were going to use that we didn't end up using in the book. And they were, you know, really intimate and beautiful because of that. But Scarlett's approach is really, and through this whole thing, really speaks to what the whole book's about anyway, right? I mean, she lost her son in this tragic shooting and her son behaved very heroically, you know, in his final moments. But she chose love. She just made an extraordinary choice in this moment. And that is, she could have been very, you know, now, even now, she could be very angry and very resentful and very, you know, vengeful, right? Like many of us would be if we had that kind of experience.
Sure.
But she had, I think she had a deep grieving period, and then she chose love, and she's got this foundation that's, I think it's called the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Foundation. I think that's it. But she made a very different choice, and that's why her letter is in the book and why we included it. It was because it was just so, and it's, to me, that's to speak to, you know, what you were talking about, that's the most intimate, vulnerable letter as far as loss goes, because that is, you know, a loss that I can't imagine. And I'm sure many of your listeners have a hard time imagining that, you know, having your 6-year-old son go to school one day and then, you know, have the entire world change on you. And I think that for her to share the way that she did was extremely courageous, but it also kind of speaks to the power of love as an action, and that's kind of what the whole book's about anyway. It's very, it was very appropriate. And you're right, it is amazing that these people share so much, right? They share their letters, and then they share their photo, their stories, their photos. I go and talk, I mean, I talk to you about it. I go out around the country and tour and play these songs, and we didn't change names, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is like, these are real people we're talking about. But at the same time, I think that, you know, like I said, if you're being truthful and you're being authentic with things, there's not a lot of reason to hide. Usually the people that want to be really private are the ones that have something to hide.
Yeah. You know what I mean? One of the things I concluded years ago was that, as I termed it back then, God already knows. So what difference if another 7 billion people know? And most of them don't even care.
That's the truth, man. I mean, you're exactly right. I think we put a false sense of importance on how much we matter. And I say that in the sense that we think that everybody is going to care that, you know, we did this 15 years ago or this happened yesterday or whatever. And, you know, the bottom line is that nobody really cares. The whole social media platform is based, I think, on that that belief that we carry, that people are going to care if I post this, and they're going to comment, and this is going to mean that, and that, you know. And in the overall scheme, it just, I don't think it matters. Most of us are looking for significance.
I've joked with people saying that if they, and I hope they never do, but if they were ever to make a reality show out of my life, I wouldn't watch. Okay?
I know, that's true, man. I feel the same way about myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's exactly what I mean about not mattering. You know, I'm not saying that you don't matter.
Sure, no, absolutely.
You understand what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, we don't matter in that context like we think we do.
Exactly. Tell me about Da Capo.
Oh, gosh, well, that means, you know, that's Italian for the head, right, which means the beginning. And so I named it, I did that in the first book, too. In the second book, I followed the same structure. So it's, Da Capo is like the intro. It's kind of setting things up. And it's written in a voice different from the rest of the book. It's written in a past tense, you know, me sitting on my couch kind of voice, kind of setting things up for you as a reader. And I think it's only, you know, 2 or 3 pages long. But the whole idea is that if you're not familiar with the project and you don't really know what it's about, it's going to lay it out for you there so you're not confused.
Hmm. I just think that this is it's an extraordinary project. I know that it isn't over. There are still people writing letters, I'm sure, to you. But I think that what is so extraordinary about your talent is that you're able to take those letters and turn them into music that can enliven the soul and the spirit, can touch the heart, and do so many different things depending upon the piece of music. So that's why I'm wondering if maybe we might want to go ahead and when we go to break here in just a moment, maybe we'll go ahead and play Scarlett's song, Celebration.
Oh, that's a great idea.
All right, we'll go out with that. I'm Richard Dugan, and this is Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Alex Woodard. He is the author of the second in what I'm believing is just going to be an ongoing series of books for the sender. This one is Love Is, and in parentheses, Not a Feeling. We'll come back and talk about that as well here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we encourage you to stay with us. We also encourage you to check out the website, and we'll give you that in just a moment.
Celebration. see how far it goes. And on that great ocean road, all the country's in our bones. All the trouble that you know empties out as you go.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with Alex Woodard, author of For the Sender. It is more than just a couple of books and CDs. It's a project that's ongoing. And like I said, Alex, I have a feeling that this is going to be part of your life for probably for some time to come in one fashion or another. But just because I think that it just touches so many people. Now, not many people know this aspect, and that is the book that I have, the hardcover that I have, comes with a paper cover, which, of course, has the horseshoe on the front. But what I find interesting is, I don't know if this was intentional by the publisher or not, but when you take the paper cover off, the hardcover is actually black with gold lettering, and it reminds me of the one book by, I believe it was Khalil Gibran.
Oh, wow.
That's what came, yeah, The Prophet. That's what came to mind in terms of, boy, I'm just going to take the cover off because the horseshoe is still there, right there in gold, and set that right up there next to that, because this is the kind of stuff that I think people really need to read. We're hearing more and more about the importance of and the value of the heart and what the heart really is to in the human being. And science is proving that it's the seat of emotion. It's the place where the thoughts that come from the mind then are turned into reality. And so people who are feeling these intense feelings in these letters that they've written to you, they're taking those thoughts and they're converting them with the emotion into the handwritten letters they send to you. And I don't think they ever expected, especially in regards to the first book, I don't think they ever expected it to turn into something like that.
Oh, absolutely not. Even on the second book, I don't think, you know, we went to, I was in Idaho just recently, and we were doing a benefit for this place called Swisher, which is a equine therapy ranch that's featured in the book. And one of the letters came from a woman who works there. And she's a really special person. But, you know, she's, I don't want to say in shock, but she just walks around, you know, saying, I can't believe this is happening, you know, half the time the way that I'm around her. And it's beautiful because it means so much to her. On a personal level, it means a lot to the ranch. It's a really special experience, I think, that people might think, oh, this is a cool thing to be a part of, but when they actually are a part of it, it's, I don't know, I think it can be a life changer for people. I think that it can, like I said a minute ago, you know, we all want to feel significant, right? And we all, that's what we search for. And this is a way that to make your story incredibly significant. You know, it makes it really matter because, you know, these letters are vehicles for people's stories, right? That's really what it is. And so by my taking your letter and putting it in the book, not only is there a degree of impermanence, you know, mm-hmm. a beautiful kind of impermanence there,
yeah.
because your story's recorded, you know, forever there. It also has a chance to do a lot of good for people. And I think that's what people are surprised by when they get involved in the project. They kind of know what it's about, but then once they get in it, they see, like you've been alluding to, the reach that it has and what it can do for people that need the help or that don't even know they need it. That's a beautiful thing. And so I think that I've kind of been talking about how there's a lot of different levels and a lot of different layers to this thing. And
yeah.
And the letter sender layer is really important because, you know, these are just four or five people, right? Out of all the letters we get, we take four or five. And I think there's probably five letters in the new book. There was mm-hmm. four in the first one. And, well, five because I had my own at the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a very I can feel like I'm making a difference in that one person's life, no matter what. You know, no matter who I reach, no matter who I touch, that one letter sender, I know I'm going to do something for them, and that has to be enough. And it still is enough, you know. And as you've been saying, we're kind of, you know, this thing is starting to see the light of day in a lot more worlds, which is cool. But I have to really keep it focused on helping those people.
Well, it also shows our interconnectedness, that we're all experiencing all of the same emotions. Even if the individual circumstances vary, we're still all going through the same stuff. And I think maybe this thought came to me that maybe a letter writer, once they realized that they were in print, that, wow, now my story can be read by others, and maybe it'll help them to get through their grief or their pain or whatever it is that they're struggling through. But I really think that this just shows just how interconnected that we all really are.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the first book was called For the Sender, Four Letters, 12 Songs, One Story.
Yeah.
And that's why. It's because we all have these same victories and defeats and triumphs and losses, and we just call them by different names, right? And in that first book, my loss, her name was Kona, right? It was my dog.
Yeah.
But that could just as easily be someone's dream or someone's partner or someone's job or whatever. You know, we call them different things, but at their core, you know, it's the same story, which is exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, this, to me, I'm probably going to say this more than one more time before the interview is over, but it's an extraordinary project and, again, an extraordinary opportunity for people to pick up a copy as well as to listen to the CD that's at the front inside cover and hear as well as read. Now, are there plans at the present time? Are you planning on putting this together in an audiobook format like the first book, or is this pretty much how we're going to perceive this particular edition of the project?
No, we will be doing an audiobook, and we're going to do something creative with it, which we're still hashing out now, but I've been a little busy and I haven't had a chance to record it yet, but I will. I'll do it here at the house. And then we're going to probably end up releasing it, the audiobook, with my spoken word and the songs embedded, but differently. It'll be like a chapter at a time, or it'll be something that, you know, makes it a little bit more of an unfolding story for people. And then if you want to, whenever all sections are out, then you'll be able to buy the whole thing. But I think we're going to try to figure out something creative where we do a chapter at a time or something like that to really give people a chance to hear it unfold slowly. I think that was a really powerful part of the first audiobook. I get just as many comments about the audio book mm-hmm. side of things as I do about the physical book
yeah.
side of things. People really, really loved that audiobook because it's unexpected, right? You have my voice talking and telling a story, and then you have the actual woman or man, whoever it was, that wrote the letter
yeah.
saying the letter, and then you have the actual songs all as part of, you know, this one audio book, and it flows like just like the physical book does. So we're definitely going to do it. I think that I'm home for a couple weeks, and I'm going to get that done, and then we'll talk to the team and figure out a way to get it out there.
You know, I started going through some of my archives, and I'm talking about going back to the 1980s. Reel-to-reel tapes, and I have a machine at home and a studio, and I'm putting them up there, and I'm starting to listen to some of these things, and I'm hearing my voice of 30 years ago and voices I haven't heard in 20 or 30 years, and wondering, gee, I wonder where these people are, you know, and tacking 30 years onto what I think their age is and hoping they're still alive. And and we had such, from what I was listening to, we had such an incredible time. It was such a family of people that I was associated with back then. And I have to believe that today, in what you're doing, that the immediate family of creators of this project and of the two works thus far, the two books for the sender, you people must just be thicker than thieves, if you will, in terms of your connection to one another, and that you just kind of flow together. And sometimes you have no clue when you start out where it's going, but boy, when you get to the end, you're going, yeah, that's where it should go.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, it's still evolving and it's still unfolding.
I mean, yeah.
You know, a lot of these, I go and do a lot of shows with this, and I usually just travel with one other person. And in this case, I usually travel with a woman named Molly Jensen, who's the voice on a lot of the songs on the new, she's the female voice on the, most of the new album. And, you know, she's been a really ardent believer in what we're doing for the last, I don't know, since we started. It's probably been like 3 years now.
Yeah.
But, you know, she hadn't read the books, believe it or not. And she went and traveled with me and sang these songs and represented the project beautifully, but she'd never sat down to read them. And she only recently did, you know. And when she sat down to read them, I mean, you should see the the text that she was sending me while she was, because, you know, it was, she was quoting lines from the book and going, oh my God, and, you know, that sort of thing. And it was all new to her. You know,
yeah.
She knew the project. She's been doing these shows. She's watched the video. She knows what, you know, she sees the videos every time we do this show, but she hadn't read the book yet. And it brought her even closer to the project. And I think that's kind of, to me, you know, it's the blessing and the curse in a way, because the project's got a lot of different aspects to it, right? There's a lot of moving pieces.
So yeah.
If you want, and this Molly example is a perfect, you know, perfect segue, because if you want it to be a book, then it's a book. And if you want it to be a song, it's a song. If you want it to be an album, that's what it is. If you need it to be a concert, it's a concert, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be all those things to you, which makes it difficult sometimes to explain to people. And if you have to do the elevator pitch in 15 seconds, it makes it hard.
It does.
Right? But that's also the beauty, is that it's all these different things. And to Molly, it was these songs and the concert, right? But now it's the book. And to some people, it might just be one letter in the book. And to other people, it might be my story. And it just depends. And I think that's kind of the beautiful thing about it to me. It's got all these different layers that it can represent to you, depending on what you need. But, you know, in answer to your question, the short answer is that, yeah, we are thicker than thieves in a lot of ways, because, you know, not only do you do this kind of emotionally charged, moving project together, but you get to see what it looks like when people react and when people connect, and that brings you even closer together, because you feel like you're really making a difference to someone.
So you've been doing this for 3 years. This project has been ongoing, and you've traveled around the country singing and doing the concerts and meeting people and certainly getting letter after letter after letter. And I'm curious about places that maybe you, when you first went there, and now maybe you've revisited some of these places. And are you aware of, or have you been told about, any of the transformations that have taken place in given communities after you left, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. I mean, I hear about that more through letters than anything. You know, people will write me, and that's usually via email, because they're not looking for, you know, to be included in the project. They're just looking to tell me what happened.
Right.
So I get a lot of feedback about connection. And about, you know, when we go do these shows, a lot of times people end up crying. And it's not a sad cry, but it's kind of more just emotionally moved kind of release.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I didn't expect at all, because folks end up feeling like it's okay to let that release and happen to themselves, where they might not have felt okay to do it before, but they look, you know, three seats down and that guy's crying. So that means it's okay for me to do it. And that's something that I never really thought, I couldn't have anticipated. But it, just that actual release means a lot to folks. And then, as you alluded to earlier, as people experience the project, they find out that they're not really that alone in their stories. And that makes a big difference,
yeah.
You know? Because we're not looking to solve anyone's problems here. That I'm not looking to give you the, you know, 10 steps to a better you kind of thing.
Right.
You know, what I'm looking to do is to show how connected we all are, because in that connection, there's a whole lot. There's a big weight that gets, you know, taken off your shoulders when you realize it's not just you, and that this is kind of life. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of part of it. And you can't. You alluded to The Prophet earlier, which is a great book. I'm going to badly paraphrase it here, but there's a saying in there that says, you know, your sorrow basically is a well that's carved deep that can hold your joy, right?
So
it's only however deep your sorrow is that's how deeply you're going to be able to feel joy.
Yeah.
I really believe that. That's really important. And you can't get away from it, you know? You can't get away from the sorrow and the pain. I mean, that's part of
who
our
we
life
are.
Here.
Yeah.
You know? But as deeply as you feel that, that's how deeply you're going to be able to feel joy, which is a beautiful thing.
Well, let me ask you, in terms of this interconnectedness, are you able to maintain your composure, or do you get caught up in the waves of emotion as you are in these concerts and with these folks as well?
That's a good question. I maintain. That's a short answer. There's a part of the show that has my dog, and like the day she died, and video of her on that day, and it's all about me. When I'm seeing that, you know, on the huge screen behind me, I can get a little caught in that. But there is a certain kind of separation that has to happen for me when I'm performing this and when I'm presenting it, right? Because in order for me to do it effectively, which means in order for me to, you know, communicate this story to you, right, I have to be the teller. The storyteller, right? I can't be the story feeler, because I wouldn't get a word out edgewise, you know? Most of my emotional connection, you know, I'm still obviously deeply emotionally connected to this stuff, but most of, like, the reaction and the crying or the whoa or whatever, for me, happens early on. It happens when I get the letter. It happens when we're doing these songs. It happens when I'm playing, you know, for that one letter sender in the room for the first time. I'm playing these songs for her that, you know, we wrote just for her. That's when it happens for me. By the time I get out into the world to present these things, you know, there has to be a certain kind of separation in order for me to do it right, which I have got no problem as of now maintaining. I think that when the letter senders, which sometimes happens, like in Idaho, we did the songs about this horse ranch, right, when I was up there, I don't know, a couple weeks ago now, and I had the actual woman who sent the letter come up on stage and read it, and which was amazing. And I felt, you know, that was, I felt it there. I felt it when there's a guy here in San Diego named Lauren Nancaro who recently passed away, and he was a beloved broadcaster here. And he wrote a note to his son, and then we did a song about it. And his son, at his, like, this kind of memorial service after he died, his son came up on stage and read the letter right before we played it.
Yeah.
And so there's a little, there's a bit of a connection there, you know, that I can't deny that. But in general, when we're going out and doing these shows, I have to be able to tell the story, you know, so I maintain a bit of separation.
Yeah.
Although I always feel emotionally connected.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a gentleman who was featured on Good Morning America several times, and he had a form of terminal disease. I don't remember what it was. And he was giving seminars on sort of preparing to die, in a manner of speaking.
Right.
And how he was doing all these different things. And I was so struck by that, because here he was, in a manner, sort of leaving a letter in video format, but of course in front of a live audience, for his family, for his children, showing who.
Oh, I remember that. The last lecture.
The last lecture.
Yeah,
thank you.
That.
And I was so taken by that. I even tried to get an interview with him before his passing. They respectfully declined only because he wanted to spend the rest of his time with his family, which I understood and respected. But it was, I was so taken by that story. It's like, wow, what, you know, where is this guy coming from? And then, of course, I saw the lecture. I watched it. And I thought, oh, okay, this is incredible.
Right.
You know, and how many of us are doing that now? And none of us... Well, my father would say that we're all terminal. I mean, you know, we're all born to die.
Right.
We just don't know. We don't always know when.
Of course.
So are we living our lives in accordingly?
Right.
And telling the people that are close to us how we feel about them,
right,
before that time comes, so that we don't have any unspoken words when that time does come.
Well, I think that's a really... That's something I think about a lot. It's a very powerful guide, is to not have any regrets.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't want to be, you know, in the moment before the bus is hitting you or whatever the heck happens, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to be thinking, I wish I would have.
Yeah.
And I try my best to live my days like that. You know, like I don't want to... Or to either, for me, if I pass away, I don't want in the moments before I do thinking to myself, God, man, I wish I would have done this. I also don't want to think that relative to someone else, like you said just a second ago, that you care about.
Yeah.
You don't want to be thinking, God, I wish I would have, before they passed away, I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would have done that, you know. It's, you know, we're kind of on the horse theme, but a quick story that just happened to me, I you know, my horse is in San Diego right now on a huge ranch, and the lady that owns the ranch has this horse that is, you know, she's had him for 20 plus years, and he's the most important, you know, animal in the world to her, right? Well, he broke his leg recently, and it was probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it was because of his age, it was a sure sign that he was going to have to be put down, right? And everybody kind of knew, she thought she knew the horse, the other horse that had kicked him to make him break his leg, right? And just the night before, she was thinking to herself, I should move him. I know I should move this horse out of that pasture. He's going to get hurt. I need to move him. But she didn't, right? So the next day, the horse's leg is broken. And then she's sitting there, and she's crying, and she's saying, I wish I would have. I wish I would have just moved him. All I had to do was move him, right? And it's easy to, you know, have the 2020 thing. But
yeah,
the short version of the story is that we all thought that horse was getting put down. And in this crazy, miraculous comeback, you know, that the horses don't come back from, he's going to be okay. But I can guarantee you that that woman is she's going to make sure that whatever she does, she's not going to be saying, I wish I would have, again, right?
Yeah.
She got a second chance.
Yeah.
And we don't all get second chances.
There's an element there that you are addressing intentionally or otherwise, that we talk about time and time again on this program, and that is the subject of our own intuition, that still small voice that is guiding us along in our lives. I've had experiences where I remember bicycling to work one day back in Phoenix, and I was bicycling on the roads between farm fields. And I had this impression that, okay, at this next corner, you're going to make a right turn and you're going to go north. You're going to go up, which actually takes me away from the direct path. And I thought, no, I'm just going to keep going. Everything's fine. I'm just going to keep going. And I got halfway down that, I'll call it block, farm field block, and that impression would not go away. And I actually turned around and went back to that road. And, of course, now it's a left turn, so I made the left, and I went up the block that I needed to, and then I continued westward onto the station. Now, I don't know why I was being prompted to do that. I don't know if I avoided something or if I was supposed to meet someone along this path. All I knew was this impression was there. It's like this woman is, you know, you should take the horse in, take the horse in, take the horse in. And so I've kind of learned that it doesn't do any good to listen to the voice if you're not going to follow it.
Yeah, that's the truth. It's like, it is, I think, the purest, most beautiful, biggest, hugest thing that we all have is that little voice.
Yeah.
And people don't listen to it enough. Now, it can... there's a couple little voices, though, right?
Yeah.
And there's a couple of... sometimes one sits on your left shoulder and one sits on your right shoulder, right? But I do believe that your gut... I mean, it's guided my decisions before.
Yeah.
As much as I can, I let it guide my decisions.
Sure.
And it doesn't always explain things particularly well.
No.
Like, I've gotten out of relationships before because my gut told me to. And everything's fine. You know, everything's great. But for some reason, that inner guide is telling me that there's another direction to go. And I listen to it. And it doesn't make for an easy explanation. You can't just, I mean, if I just say, oh, I'm just listening to my gut, nobody wants to hear that, right? But it's such a true compass, you know, which I talk about in the book a lot. I talk about using a compass instead of a map, right? Walking through life with a compass in your hand instead of always looking at a roadmap, because you at least get a direction, you kind of know where you're going, but, you know, the rest is up to you. And that compass is really your intuition. It's really your heart. You can call it whatever you want, but it's that gut voice, right, that's telling you the right thing to do. And, you know, for each of us, we tend to have so many layers that get piled on top of it, right? From media and from, you know, all these other inputs that are flying into our consciousness all the time. But that gut, man, you know, that I really believe that it guides you, you know. And it's not always, doesn't always guide you towards a particular popular decision in other people's eyes.
Right.
But it's the right thing for you.
Well, I find it hard to believe that Archie Bunker actually said this. He must have said this facetiously.
All right.
Your soul is like a compass. It tells you where to go, but not how to get there.
Right.
And he was probably talking with Meathead about something or other, and that's how that came up. But that's absolutely true. And I also tell people that there is no fear when listening to the voice and following it, because your intuition will never, ever, 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 ever lead you astray. It will never hurt you. It may challenge you, but that's different.
Right.
It won't put you in harm's way. And you know, again, we talk about this all the time on this program, because it's the one constant that we as individuals, when we think of ourselves in that way, that we can count on.
Right.
And I often I use this construct in terms of our interconnectedness, that Alex will get one message and Richard will get another message, but they are, as far as the big picture, which we can't see, perfectly synchronized and in accordance with the big picture.
Absolutely, yeah, they're in line, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
We just don't know how, even though we're doing different things.
Right, and, you know, the thing is, we don't even need to know how.
Exactly.
And we don't need to know the reasons, and we don't, you know, we as people, we tend to look for blame, and we look for credit, and we look for all these different things, right? We try to assign all these different attributes to situations, and you just don't need to do it, man. It is what it is. Your gut's telling you something, that's what it's telling you. You don't need to break it down and analyze. I was a big analyzer, you know, like in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would take every single behavior I saw in someone else or someone I was in a relationship with or whatever and analyze the heck out of it. And, you know, I'm almost the opposite now. It's really about the present moment and kind of doing the right thing according to your heart, like we're talking about, in that moment. And, of course, you have to plan for the future. And you're not always, you know, it doesn't suggest some kind of hedonistic thing where we're just living right now. But
right.
The idea is that's all you get, really, right? That's
mm-hmm.
all we know about.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's all. The past is done, and in the future, we really, as much as we like to predict it, we really don't know what's coming.
Not a clue.
I don't know what's going to happen to me when I get off the phone with you.
Yeah.
I have an idea about, you know, what's going to happen.
Plans.
Right, but I don't know, man, you know. So, anyway, I think that it's all these things that we're discussing, you know, we're talking about, like, you know, your soul is a compass, or, like, your heart is a guide.
Yeah.
And we're talking about living now, and we're talking about how precious life is, right? All that stuff points to just doing the best that you can right now, because that's what we have. And that means, you know, at least, especially with this book that, you know, that you and I are talking about, like, that's all about love as an action in these small things. There's a quote in there that, not quote, I mean, I wrote it, but it's a line that mm-hmm. says, most of us don't need a healing, we need a resurrection born in small things.
Right? Oh, I like that.
And those small things that we do
yeah.
are what we do for ourselves and what we do for each other. And it's not big, huge shift of consciousness stuff. I'm talking uh-huh. about, like, buying the guy on the corner a taco, you know, who's homeless that needs it, you know? Those small things that we do, there's a chance for rebirth in all of those moments, right? And extraordinary
yeah.
things can happen there.
Well, and I'll share with you a very quick story on that, too. And it just happened recently. I was on my morning walk, and my wife had given me this blueberry muffin that was in my pocket, and it was wrapped up, you know, fine. And I'm heading up the main street, State Street here in Santa Barbara, and there's this homeless fella, and he's not asking for anything. He's just standing there. And the prompting came. Give him the blueberry muffin. And I thought, oh, no, I don't think so. And so I walked on by him. But the prompting continued, basically saying, you know, you're just going to throw it away when you get to the office. I walked 3 blocks, okay? And I got to this point 3 blocks down the road. And the prompting just would not go. It was like it was getting stronger and louder. And I thought, oh, fine. All right. So I circumvented my way around. I came back around the same way. I crossed the street to where he was. And I walked up to him and I handed him the blueberry muffin. I said, would you like this? And he said, sure. And I kid you not, as I'm walking away, from behind, I hear a woman's voice say to the same guy I just gave a blueberry muffin, would you like a cup of coffee?
Huh.
And I thought, well, then maybe my resistance was part of the plan, because if I had given it to him then, when initially prompted, that woman wouldn't have been there right behind me.
That's probably true. I mean, you know, it's that whole pay it forward thing, right? There's a great ad that I think it's still running. I can't for the life of me remember who it is, but it's a TV commercial that shows people seeing other people do good things, and that makes them do a good thing.
But oh yeah,
it all wraps back around to the very first person seeing someone do a good thing. You know, it's this crazy cool circle.
That oh yeah,
show. And I'm sure you're right. You know, it's. What you're doing, you paid it forward in a way for that guy that you didn't even know, right? It's not only paying it forward for yourself, it's paying it forward for the people, you know, that are behind you.
Yeah.
That see you do it, you know, and say, oh, wow.
And that synchronicity just blew me. I'm going, wow,
yeah,
wow.
Cool.
You know, what a... an event that the universe created for my awareness and understanding. And like I said, this guy, he was just standing there, minding his own. He was very thankful. He said, God bless you and all of this. So we just don't know the impact that we're going to have on people. It reminds me of James Redfield's book, The Celestine Prophecy,
right.
And the message in there that each one of us has a message for the other. And it is imperative that we share that message, because we're all trying to put together the pieces of the puzzle that we've been given. And when I give you a particular message, you're able to put another piece into the puzzle, and vice versa. And so to not give that message in whatever form it may take, is to deny the other person the ability to continue to piecing those pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. And, you know, it's just, I may have shared this with you in the first program we did, but I've recoined a word instead of using the word coincidence, coincidence. Because that's what they are. They're events that coincide. They come together, and there is no accident there. There is meaning to my life and your life and to the universe that we live in, even, and going back to what you said, even if we never know why.
It's very, you know, we tend to really want to know why, don't we?
No, we do.
You know, and we want the answers, or we want, like I said earlier, the blame or the credit, or we want, you know, we're very good at trying to assign that
yeah.
stuff. And sometimes, well, not even sometimes, most of the time, I think that we're really much better off not knowing why at all.
I think so.
As long as we're doing the right thing, you don't need to know much else.
Exactly. For the sender, love is not a feeling, and Alex Woodard is my guest. And is the best website for folks to go to alexwoodard.com?
Yeah, that's the best one.
All right. Published by Hay House, and it's available both on Amazon and all the various outlets online, as well as probably your local bookstore. And if they don't have it, I'm sure that they can order it. Again, For the Sender. Alex, before we wrap up, I may have asked you these questions the last time you were on the program, but I'm going to ask them again just the same for those who may not have heard that particular program yet. Who is Alex Woodard?
Oh, man. Well, I don't know what answer I gave you the first time around. So my second time might be a whole new thing.
And that's fine.
Oh, man. Who is Alex Woodard? Well, you know, I'm just a guy that is trying to do the right thing. And to me, that means using whatever talent I ended up getting and developing it as much as I could, and which maybe someday we can talk about more, which is a big part of my story. It's, you know, it's really about taking what you got and making the best of it. And I think that these days, if I had to answer that question in a, like, five-word, you know,
yeah.
like a five-word sentence or something, I'd probably say that I want what I got.
Ah, I like that.
That's what I'd say.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now, in this, especially in this project, but not necessarily exclusive to it?
Well, you know, I'm not too attached to outcomes, which sounds a little Hay House-y, I know, but I have to be. That's how you have to be with your art. I think that if I can keep doing this, I will be. That's all I can ask for, right? And so that means that somehow you got to pay your bills, and somehow there has to be an audience, and those kinds of things need to keep, you know, generating somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, if I can keep being creative like this and making a difference, that's all I can hope for. I think that, you know, this project's going to evolve. I think that my writing and the other things that I'm doing is going to continue to evolve, and as long as there's an outlet for that for me, I'll be a really, really happy guy.
This answer, the answer to this question may be obvious to most, but nonetheless, who inspires you?
Well, I'd say you do. And that's because how this whole project started, and the reason that I'm on this whole path, right, this entirely different chapter of my life opened up. Because I listened to somebody else's story. And that was a woman named Emily who wrote me a letter that became the first letter in the first For the Sender book. And we wrote a song called For the Sender about that letter. That's where it all started, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was only because someone else told me their story. So my answer would be you do.
I want to thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing this work and the project For the Sender with us. And we look forward to talking with you again. And if you find yourself up here in Santa Barbara, hey, let's have you in studio and we'll talk again.
That'd be great. I'd be happy to.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to love.
They took me from the fire. Metal forged my skin for a dagger of desires, laying hearts of men. Then they put me in a box with others just like me, high upon a shelf. For all the world.
glowing screen, where he drowned himself in dew until he had enough one day. When he took me in his hand,
but I didn't mean to hurt you.